From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Bay Hernandez Point.
Hayward.
Piedmont, California.
Pleasanton.
Fall Town.
Richmond. Sunset.
Oakland, California.
Concord, California.
Fairfield.
Foothill.
Coming up, we hear how a photograph can have the power to change lives.
It's been used to change the course of war. It's been used to motivate people to get up and go into the streets, contact their legislators.
Then we meet pianist Sarah Cahill ahead of her performance at the Berklee Art Festival this weekend.
I love Lady Gaga and I love Katy Perry, but it's like, it's so kind of in your face.
And we visit France in Berklee.
I can speak French like a mile a minute, and as soon as someone says something to me, I'm totally in another world because I don't know what they said.
Aujourd'hui sur Cross Currents. Stay with us. They say a picture is worth a thousand words. Well, a great one is probably worth much more than that. Think of famous photos like the Napalm Girl in Vietnam, the post-depression migrant mother by Dorothea Lange, athletes Tommy Smith and John Carlos making black power salutes at the 1968 Olympics, or Steve McCurry's Afghan Girl. A picture can connect us with people and help us understand their lives. It can even help create tangible social change and a better world. That's what photographer Nancy Faris believed when she founded the nonprofit Photo Philanthropy in 2009. Her job now is to connect professional photographers with nonprofits to help them bring awareness to the causes they serve. Faris joined me in the KALW studios and told me she was first inspired when she was photographing South Sudanese in the Kakuma refugee camp in Kenya for Human Rights Watch.
It was so eye-opening for me because I was shooting this population of people, the Lost Boys of the Sudan. They had gone there in 1992. This was 2008, 2009. You know, they'd been, a lot of those people had been in that refugee camp that whole time. And so the whole refugee story was new to me. But I was also just particularly moved by the power of the people, the effectiveness of this organization, the way they partnered with UN High Commissioner on Refugees to deal with this intractable, difficult problem, often a real challenge to themselves. A lot of these people were from Nairobi. They left their family for weeks at a time to deal with the emergency that was right in front of them. The person who was starving or hungry and fled, been on the road for 3 years looking for a place to live. And so I came home with the idea that I was inspired by the Goldman Environmental Prize. And I thought that one of the things they do really well there is they recognize grassroots activism in a very powerful way. And they don't identify a whole lot. I think they identify maybe six different winners. But they cast a bright light on grassroots activism and excellence and hold that up as a model. So I sort of naively thought, why don't I do that for photographers who are shooting in this space, in this nonprofit space, and particularly who were telling nonprofit stories in a visual manner. So I've always been interested in photo essays, so a group, a body of images that tells a story that articulates the work that the nonprofit is doing.
So why don't you explain to me that process of here is a photograph and it will lead to social change? How does it usually work?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's important to just think about storytelling, period. So because photos are, and what we're looking at is, you know, photo essays that tell that story. We're interested in stories that matter and visible tools that drive stories that matter. Photography, since its inception, has always been used to create awareness. And it's been used to change the course of war. It's been used to motivate people to get up and go into the streets, contact their legislators. And so we're particularly interested in how you can use we're interested in photography and how photography can cut through the digital clutter. It's particularly high-quality photography.
Digital clutter.
Yeah.
Like what?
What do you mean? Well, we all know what that is, right? The junk in our lives. And how you can create that distilling image that stays with someone. I mean, I think often people don't later think back on, you know, a broad video that they saw, but they can easily remember one image that they might not have seen for 10 or 15 years, but it's the image of Nick Ut's photo of the napalm girl running away from a blast in Vietnam, in the Vietnam War. I mean, those kinds of images, the image of the Earth from space that came out actually just over 50 years ago, is a NASA image. And it's called the Blue Marble, and it was the first picture of Earth from outer space, and it drove our environmental movements that we have today, because all of a sudden people realized the fragility of the Earth, and it motivated them to begin to do something about
that. They saw it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that photography and visual media broadly can connect you on such a basic, visceral human level. When you engage with a photo, you make a decision. When you glance at a photo, you make a decision right away. You're either going to look away because it's not of interest to you, or you're coming in, you're going closer, you're sort of relating to it. Think of the Dorothea Lange image, the famous migrant mother image, you know, where it's this iconic image of the Dust Bowl, and it's a woman who has two children draped over her shoulder. She's sort of Madonna-like, a beautiful, beautiful features, and yet she's so haggard and exhausted, and you immediately relate to her when you see that, and you think, what, I care about this woman. And what has caused this? Why is she in this situation? And that image itself, Dorothea Lange shot it on behalf of the Farm Services Administration. And that image was used, distributed throughout the United States. And the U.S. Congress began funding programs to supply resources for people who had fled the Dust Bowl after that. So, you know, photography, in answer to your question, photography is replete with examples of people seeing an image and reacting to it in a socially provocative way.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm speaking with Nancy Farese, founder of Photo Philanthropy. You know, it's clear that you're passionate about this work and passionate about the power of a photograph and what it can do. Can you explain that? What is the power of that image? When you look at it, what happens, what should happen for you to make that connection?
I don't, it's interesting. I'm such a visual person. I'm surrounded by so many photos. And as you asked that question, I immediately was thinking of all these images that come up to me. And I think that on a very fundamental level, visual communication connects people in their hearts and in their minds. So it's both an emotional connection and an intellectual connection. So if you think back to images in your own past that have been pivotal for you, I mean, most of us, like I said, you might not have seen that image for 10 years, but you can immediately recall certain aspects. And you can also recall what your emotional link was. And so I think that there's a huge power and almost a unique value in visual communications that allows that connection to happen that words don't do justice to. I mean, music relates to us. All these arts relate to us in different ways. But I think we're such highly visible and visual people as human beings that we want to connect with people. We want to understand them. And you know, as a photographer, for any image, if you glance at any image in the newspaper, you connect immediately, you seek on an unconscious level that person's eyes. And so, for example, if the eyes are blurred out, it's a little disconcerting, it's a little edgy. Your eyes always just unconsciously immediately try to find the eyes. And if you can't find the eyes, your eyes immediately go to the lightest point in the photo. And so there are ways that, you know, that we, I think, just as a visual sort of a subconscious tool that we connect like that.
What is this really for you? What is it to you about making a social impact, or what is it about the nonprofit world that draws you where you could be doing something else somewhere else, making probably a lot more money?
Well, I don't know. I think we all have a responsibility to understand what how we use the skills that we have to make impact in the world. And I think when I was in Sudan at Kakuma Refugee Camp and working with those folks from the International Rescue Committee, it just struck me that I can't solve the health issue of this woman who's standing right in front of them, who's on the edge of death, but I can take photos that reward that and that recognize that plight and recognize this organization for excellence who's addressing this need.
Nancy Farese is the founder of Photo Philanthropy. What photographs have made an impact on you or caused you to think differently? Share them with us on Facebook and Twitter. We're KALW. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Just as a picture can connect us to people we've never met and places we've never been, music equally can transport us from our living rooms instantly to 19th century Vienna or 1960s Addis Ababa. But for now, let's stay in San Francisco to hear a local musician tell her story in this edition of Bay Area Beats.
My name is Sarah Cahill, and I'm a pianist, and we're here at the Berklee Arts Festival space, and at this 9-foot Baldwin that belongs to Jerry Cadierna.
It's fitting for Sarah Cahill to introduce the piano before her, as she would introduce another person in the room, because when she places her fingers on the keys of any piano, either gently or forcefully, she makes it come alive with the breadth of emotion we rarely hear come from an instrument. Cahill is considered one of the architects and champions of the new music scene in the Bay Area. She founded the annual Garden of Memory concert at the Chapel of the Chimes in Oakland, which is one of the many ways she tries to make contemporary music more accessible to a wider audience. She also does that Sunday nights on her radio show Then and Now, right here on KALW. Cahill spoke with KALW's Martina Castro and played some songs for her as she described why she ended up leaving the more formal classical world for the freedom of the experimental genre.
So I started when I was maybe 7 and took piano lessons from a teacher who was okay. And then when I was 8 or possibly 9, I met a woman who completely changed my life. And when you talk about great, 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 great teachers, she was it for me. Her name is Sharon Mann. At that time, it was Sharon Polk. She treated me like a real pianist. From the time I was 8 years old, she was talking to me about Bach and the different dance movements in Bach and the allemands and the courants and the gigue. And growing up with her as my teacher, it was a profound, profound experience. I had my little record player and I would hear her play the Brahms Horn Trio, and then I'd come back and listen to the Dennis Brain recording of the Brahms Horn Trio, and just over and over and over and over. So I was one of those kids who just, like, enjoyed my solitude, and I had a harpsichord in my bedroom, and, you know, like, one of those nerdy classical music kids. So now I play pretty much contemporary music and work with composers. And now I feel like I have a purpose. And playing Bach and Beethoven, I love those composers, but I don't feel a sense of purpose or that I have so much to say about the Bach English Suite in A minor that no one else has to say. But with the composers I work with, I get to premiere their pieces, record them, commission them, introduce the world to these people. I'm very fond of working with lesser-known composers and people that have been, for one reason or another, kind of neglected. So I want to show you this Japanese composer, Mamoru Fujieda, whose life work is to write patterns of plants. And so he gets a particular plant, and he hooks a device to the leaves of the plant to derive the bioelectric fluctuations, the data of the plant, and then he somehow translates it into music. And I say, Mamoru, how do you get from this, you know, A to B? Like, how do you actually write music based on the data of plants? And he says, well, that's my secret. But they're these beautiful, gentle pieces, and I love them because in our kind of chaotic world when, like, you know, the music my daughter Miranda listens to is sometimes so, like, I love Lady Gaga and I love Katy Perry, but it's like, it's so kind of in your face and so processed. And so I really want to sometimes get back to gentle, simple music and quiet music. And so I'll just play a little bit of Mamoru Fujieda. Here's one of his patterns of plants from several years ago. Known and well-trodden path of classical music and the pieces that one hears all the time at, you know, Davies Hall and the and Cal performances and the pianists come to town to play, I mean, really famous pianists, I just would be thrashing around in obscurity and feeling like I had no purpose, really. How do you compare to the thousands of performances that they've already heard? And so it's that's too anxiety provoking for me. And but that isn't really the reason I play new music. The reason I play new music is because I just love it. I respond so much to these pieces. I love playing music by women composers. So I've been spending a lot of time with these pieces by Anne Southam. I have to give credit for introducing me to Anne Southam to Richard Friedman, who hosts Music from Other Minds on KALW, and he's been a great admirer of Anne Southam for a long time. So this is dividing your brain in half. This is like the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. So here's a 7-beat pattern. That's 7 beats. So she just gives that at the beginning, and this is in manuscript, so you don't even get, like, all you know is that you're supposed to keep doing this over and over. And then at the same time, you do these, like, fives and twos. That's one, and then another figure, and then four. Anyway, it's some, and then six. I've really only had a week on this, but I wanted to demonstrate because this is like my new sort of obsession. Here it is. So you start, and then you have to come in at the fifth note. To me, it's just so satisfying, and it's so kind of pleasurable and just joyful. It's really, really joyful.
That's pianist Sarah Cahill. She spoke with KALW's Martina Castro, who also produced that piece. You can see Cahill perform live this Saturday at the Berkeley Arts Festival space in downtown Berkeley, where she'll perform two post-minimalist masterpieces. For more information, go to KALW.org. And as you may know, you can also hear Sarah each week on KALW, hosting her radio program Then and Now, Sundays at 8 p.m.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. The Berkeley Arts Festival. I don't think I've ever been there. I definitely need to go. We've been asking our staff to go out to a place they've never been. Reporter Eva Sansin has this place profile from somewhere she hadn't visited, but that's close to her roots.
My pick for the place profile was the Alliance Française in Berkeley. I was living like, it's ridiculous to say, but I was really living like two houses away from the Alliance Française. I don't know, I just felt it was so close that it was a little bit too close. In the end, I would just always feel like, oh, I'm going to go tomorrow, oh, I'm going to go next Wednesday, and I never got to go there, actually, but I've never been in. I've never stepped a foot inside this place before. When we arrived, it was a potluck day, so potluck and conversation. And that means that you come with food and you start speaking in French with everyone. So I just started to speak in French with everyone. So, bonjour, comment allez-vous? Je m'appelle Eva. And everybody started to respond to me, like, in French. And I was like, wow, impressed.
Bonjour et bienvenue à l'Alliance Française.
My name is Bill Moriarty, and I live in Berkeley, California.
My name is Nathalie de Marjorie Moriarty. And I'm from Berkeley.
I come here because my wife is French, of course, and she likes to have a little bit of the feel at home. And in Berkeley, she can feel as if she's in France. I've been trying to learn French now for going on 5 years, and I'm not very good. I can speak French like a mile a minute, and as soon as someone says something to me, I'm totally in another world because I don't know what they said.
It's like a big family here. It's also in a house that makes it more intimate.
Where are you from?
Originally, I'm from Versailles, and I lived a long time in Marseille.
Oh, wow.
That's where I was living before I came here.
Oh, great. I'm from Marseille, too.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
Douce France, cher pays de mon enfance, bercé de tendre insouciance, je t'ai gardé dans mon cœur.
Those were the voices of Bill Moriarty and Nathalie de Marjorie Moriarty, brought to us by reporter Eva Sansin from L'Alliance Française in Berkeley. Tell us about your experience going somewhere you've never been. Leave us a message on our feedback line. It's 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106, and you may hear yourself and your experience on the air.
La joie ou la douleur.
And before we leave you today, we want to share the story behind the audiograph sound that we've been playing all week on KALW.
Okay. Timers, are you all set to zero?
Yep.
Yes. Brunos, listos? Unos, dos, vámonos.
We asked you what you think it is and where in the Bay Area it's from. KALW's Julie Kane went to a grapevine pruning contest in Sonoma County's Alexander Valley to bring us the answer.
Can you tell me just what's going on? Can you just kind of describe what you see?
Actually, right now what they're doing is a pruning contest. They're what they are doing is they're competing who is the best pruner. And they're competing who's the fastest one, best pruner, who does a good job, the cuts on the vine. So, yeah, that's what's going on right now. And, of course, they compete for prizes and stuff. So it's pretty neat.
Once!
Once!
This is a skill. This is an art. It's not a lot of people can do it and do it this fast and well. So.
And can you guys tell me, like, really in a basic way, why pruning matters?
This makes or breaks a season right here, the pruning. Because if you didn't prune it, you'd have way too much fruit, it'd never get ripe. If you underprune it, then they're going to ripen too early, and then the wine's not going to be good. So pruning is really sets the tone for what's going to happen the rest of the year. There's some hot pruners out here. There's some good guys. So fast and good.
And first place, Fernando Espita, Valdez Vineyard Management.
Fernando, ¿y cómo es el apellido?
Espitia.
Bueno, felicidades.
Oh, gracias.
¿Usted ganó?
Sí, el primer lugar.
¿Qué? Felicidades. Gracias.
Those were the voices of Rosie Chavez, Mark Hauser, and Fernando Espitia. This week, for the first time, we stumped you. Nobody got it right. But don't feel bad. That's part of Audiograph. We want to introduce you to places and sounds in the Bay Area you might never have heard before. And we want you to tell us where to go next. We've been getting some great suggestions, and there'll be another contest next week. In the meantime, visit our Facebook page, KALW, to hear more from Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. And that does it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Julie Kane, Audrey Dilling, Panina Eilberg-Schwartz, Nina Gensler-Debs, Alex Kaminsky, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Erica Moo, Seth Samuel, Laura Saponera, Stephen Short, and RJ Sloan. Today's show is engineered by Chris Hoff. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our managing editor. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. And thank you. We are listener-supported radio. You're listening to the fast-as-lightning tabla playing of Zakir Hussain. He was born in India, but has been teaching at the Ali Akbar Khan College of Music in San Anselmo since 1970. Hussain joins some jazz heavyweights this weekend on March 8th, 9th, and the 10th at the new SF Jazz Center in San Francisco. Details are at KALW.org. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.